Roll call.
Michael Gable.
I'm here.
David Holman.
Present.
Andy Berg.
Here.
Leah Blau. Rick Dodge.
Here.
John Poole.
Here.
Greg Retzloff.
Here.
Akia Hughes.
Kaya.
Okay. Nakia Hughes.
Oh, here.
Megan Sutter.
Here.
Do we have any citizens that have comments? There's always a crowd for that, you know. I have approval of the minutes. So I have a motion to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're going to butcher this name. Mm-hmm. Resolution to approve the appointment of Tarza Panasiewicz. How close?
Not
Okay. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. I haven't been in one meeting where they've gotten it right the first time, so.
It's a lot of letters.
It's a lot of letters, and it's not pronounced how it's spelt, so.
How do you pronounce it?
Panasiewicz.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got that.
Yeah. Yes, and Tara's the first name, so.
That one was easy.
That one's like Gone with the Wind, so that's easy, right?
We had Tara on the agenda earlier this summer. However, she was out of town and unable to make the meeting, so the committee asked that we reschedule the time she could be here, so she's here today. We're asking for her appointment to the Kenosha County Workforce Development Board. Okay. And she'd be taking Tracy Nielsen's spot, who was the head of United Way, which is what Tara's currently doing.
You're the head of United Way now?
Yes, as of February 15th of this year.
Okay. Anybody got any questions for Terry? Is United Way still down here by Jackie?
Right by Cava, yes.
Yeah, I knew Tracy when she was up in Racine at United Way.
Mm-hmm. Tracy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's where, well, she started in United Way, California, and then came to Racine, and then now moved back home.
Anybody got any questions?
I have one. I'd be curious, and maybe it's too early to kind of sift this out, the relationship between the work of the Workforce Development Board and STRIVE.
Mm-hmm. The STRIVE Together initiative that we have going on, the baton has really been passed to Building Our Future. That's a cradle to career initiative, and they're currently in my building. So they've been named Building Our Future now, and they have an executive director all on their own. United Way of Kenosha County is acting as their fiscal agent to get them started. And I participate and sit on their executive committee and the leadership table so I can guide the work that they're doing and work very closely with the executive director. But we're up and running now, and we're focusing on a lot of different focus groups, kindergarten readiness, along, and that's why the United Way mission fits so good with that, because we're all about building an educated workforce, and it matches, starting early.
Anybody else?
It's a good time to be coming on board.
Absolutely. Very excited. It's been like drinking from a fire hose since February, but that's okay, right?
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to working with everybody.
Well, like I say, anything I can do for you, personally or as a supervisor, feel free to chase me down.
Okay.
I don't have a life.
Second.
That's very nice. Thank you very much. Have a great meeting.
Thank you.
Second quarter DHS fiscal update. That's why we're holding the meeting with the camera.
Fortunately, or unfortunately, you have two of us tonight. So this is Tammy Capito. I think you met her a while back when she first started. So I'm just here as her sidekick. It's her first presentation.
Yep. So here we've got our 2017 financial projection as of our second quarter. The aging and disability services, right now we're projecting a $351,000 loss. And we do have the deficit of $570,000 in behavioral health, which is offset by savings in other business units of $187,000 and increased revenue of almost $31,000. Our children and family services, right now we're projecting a surplus of $250,000. And we have a placement shortage of $184,000 offset by MA revenue, whereas where we came to the $250,000 surplus. Health, we're projecting at a $42,000 surplus. We have a revenue shortfall of $15,000 in our clinical area, and we're going to offset that by expenditure savings of $57,000. For the medical examiner, we are projecting a $30,000 loss. Our autopsies are higher, and we're projecting to be 20 over last year. And those are $1,500 each, so that would be a $30,000 deficit. The Veterans Court, we are projecting a levy need of $13,603. And this is for the Veterans Court. So in 2016, we had a grant that covered it. It is now not covered by the grant. It's covered by Kenosha County. And that we're projecting with veterans, the cost is $350 per month plus urine analysis, so it ends up being like $675 per month per veteran. So that gives us a net levy need of $103,000 as of June 30th. And then down below for Brookside, we are projecting, or we have a year-to-date loss of $695,000. But for the 2017 budget, we had already projected the year-end loss of $1.6 million. So normally at this time, we would expect to be at $803,000 loss. So we're actually doing a little bit better than what we had budgeted. So the next page, page two, shows the aging and disability services, the mental health portion of it. And we are projecting a loss of $570,000, so over budget. The institutes, the state institutes, is comprised of $665,000 of that, $570,000. And then we're offsetting that with other revenues.
How much is the $570,000 a percentage, the actual total budget, would you say?
Yeah.
So what is that? You're a math major.
I'm an accountant. Do not call me a math major.
I think that's about 4, 5, or 6%. Is that right?
No, you're gonna make me call
more. Like
yeah.
Was it 13 million? You said.
Yeah. About 13. So 1% would be 1.3 or 10%.
It's not. It's 1.3. Yeah, it's very little.
Yeah.
Yeah, very little.
But it's their portion is both. That's their heavy levy portion.
Okay.
In their division. So that's,
but I mean, the thing is, I guess my point is, it's tough. I mean, that's, you could do much better.
They
try. Well, you know, some fair.
So on the next page, page three, our adult crisis contacts, our 2017 projected estimate is up 258. The emergency detentions is just up a little bit, projected to be at 410. Then we look at the chart on the left down below. The care center is running pretty flat at 726 projected, but you can see our institute's admissions is up. We're projecting at 398. And then our hospital admissions is up a little bit to 22. When we look at the average length of stay, getting back to the institute, the length of stay has gone down to 7.5. So while our admissions has gone up, the length of stay has been reduced. The care center is relatively flat at 3.6, and hospitals is 4.1, up from 3.4.
In the institution admissions, what's the reason for the increase? Is there anything in particular that's outstanding on that? Or
The loss of hospital beds, right?
Yeah, it's still the fact that we can't get people in the hospitals. And well, it's particularly at St. Luke's, but yeah, the numbers, it's all need-based.
Are you saying that our institute numbers would go down if we could put people in the
In
a hospital here?
Well, at St. Luke's, at a general hospital. Again, if we put them in another like psychiatric hospital, like Aurora Psychiatric or Rogers or something, then we still have the problem that Medicaid won't cover because it's considered an IMD, Institute for Mental Disease. But that was the benefit with St. Luke's, is that we were able to, that's considered a general hospital with psychiatric beds, so we could charge Medicaid for them.
Will the care center take care of some of this, do you think?
To some degree.
Because if you look at the length of stay, that tells me that these may not be so severe. Mm-hmm. If it's to 7.5 days compared to 11.9. Or is that just the way it shook out there?
I think that's the way it's shaking out right now, but I do think we're doing a much better job of connecting quickly with the institutes and getting a plan to get that person back into care in the community. So that'll help also with the care center, and we'll put that crisis center in the front part of that building to try to divert folks from.
So that could only help, I would think.
I would think so, yeah.
When is the care center open?
They're still projecting, I believe, January. Yeah. So construction is done sometime in December is what we had thought.
Yeah. Move in.
Move in.
Ramping up.
Anybody got else? Anything else for Tara?
Tammy.
Yeah, I'm Tammy.
Huh? I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Thought we were back on agenda one.
Wow.
I'll never come back.
Everything.
You said it like 2 years ago.
Don't go there. I did not say
two. Yes, you did.
So the next two in charge.
One question, if we go back to the first page under Brookside. That deficit we're looking at, does that have anything to do with any changes in the funding of Medicare or Medicaid? Or I was believing that this was going to be off of the levy, that they were going to...
That this is not on the levy. That's correct. Okay. This will be part of the reserves.
Okay.
I think, and you can...
This is our construction year.
Yes.
Though.
We're down
this
10
year
beds.
And next year, I mean, the county board adopted a budgeted loss for this year because we're down 100 to 140 beds. And the doubling up and everything. So this was our loss year, and then next year... You'll also see another loss, which was in the projected 20-year forecast to have 2 years of loss.
Thank you.
Oh, no, that's okay. Page 4 and 5 shows the adult and juvenile crisis percentages by presenting problems. And then if we go to page 6, we've got the Division of Children and Family Services, the placement cost comparison. So right now we're projecting to be $184,000 over budget. And again, this is through June of 2017 projection. And the next page, page 7, which is the out-of-placement daily rate and days of care analysis. I just want to point out under the institutions, the 2017 adopted rate, the institutions is the bottom one, we had $731 per day, and we're actually coming in at $135 a day. And the reason for this is when we get billed by the institutions, it usually runs around $1,100 a day. We don't get credited for anything that's covered by Medicaid or by insurance until they discharge. So we have the children's got about $135,000 in credits for 2016 revenue coming in 2017.
Wouldn't you show as a accounts receivable?
No, because it comes off the bill. So they bill us the full amount, and then they give us credit for it when the insurances come through.
But are you accounting for it here? And you said, is it?
At the end of the year, we never know when we're going to get paid by the insurance.
Yeah, but shouldn't it be a settlement?
And we don't know if there's insurance on an individual, how much they'll cover.
I understand that. But still, shouldn't that be, you're an accountant, shouldn't that be sent as a...
Like they said, they don't know what they're going to get paid.
But that's then, but if I'm in a business and I got a receivable and I'm not sure I'm ever going to get it, then that goes into accounts. Don't I still have to account for that?
The known, at the end of every year, at the end of every quarter, at the end of every month, if we know we're getting some money in, we do book the receivable and we put the revenue in the associated month that it's for. However, the institutes are a different animal. I mean, we're getting even back from beginning of 2016 credits from Medicare from dads that we have no clue, and they bill whenever they can. Now, Tammy mentioned today that as a juvenile, they don't bill until the end of the stay. We don't know what their insurance is. We don't know how much the insurance is going to pay. We don't know anything about that. And this was...
So you don't know what number you could put to an account? Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, that answers that. Okay.
The next page, page 8. Is the medical examiner charts. So we are projecting 2017. In the undetermined and pending, we have 33. But again, that's just because we're projecting out. And if you look at page 9, we have 17 pending investigation. So once we get those, know where those are going, that would be put into the correct categories, whether it's drug overdose or other. And then page 8 has the key statistics. And then again, 2017 is projected out straight line.
I got a thought, and I have no proof to back it up. My thought is, as the job numbers increase, and especially now as the Foxconn comes in here, those people that have, what I could say, the dignity of a job, brings the numbers of suicides and drug overdoses, and I would like to think that a lot of these numbers will go down because of these people being able to provide for their families and having a better lifestyle. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the years ahead.
In China, they put nets around Foxconn so that they wouldn't jump off the roof.
That comes the suicide down too, yeah.
True story.
We didn't need that.
All right, and then the next two pages, 10 and 11, are books side. So we've got our Medicare. We are averaging 36.7 per census, and we budgeted 39.5. Our Medicaid, we're running about the same, 68.7, and we budgeted 68.5. Our private pay, we are running 29, and we budgeted at 28. And our managed care, we're running at 6.8, and we budgeted 4.5. And then again, on page 11 is where we are currently running. So here it shows our deficit of $695,000. Our target is 50%, so we're at 43.3%. So we actually are having a savings over what we budgeted currently.
This is what we can occupy. The 100.5% is of what we can, not what potential there is.
That's kind of a... I don't like that statistic this year because in the beginning of the year through May 17th, we had 154 beds to fill, but we budgeted at 140 for an average year round because of the move.
Yeah.
So this statistic should never be more than 100%. I know, it's kind of a weird thing. But I don't like that statistic.
Sorry.
Just disregard.
All right.
We'll be rounding area here, right?
Let's get rid of it.
All
Any more questions for Tammy?
So is the Vivitrol program working any on the, I mean, looking at the drug overdose figures, it doesn't appear to be, but have you heard any?
Well, it's having a significant impact on those that are enrolled in the program. It's been very successful on getting people off of opioids and alcohol in some cases. I think its numbers are, we just got another additional monies to fund about 10 more people from the state that will also have a positive impact on making treatment available. There's still always going to be a population that either A, doesn't want it, or you know, isn't ready for it at this point in time. So, you know, unfortunately, you're going to see those type of numbers in our ME's office for a while. But I mean, we got a positive response with the state on the grants, and also the Narcan grant, where they're out training first responders and law enforcement, and just making that available to people that are in situations they shouldn't be in. So,
all is the sheriff going to put it in his squad cars?
The sheriff's department has signed on for the training. Yes. It's kind of a, you know, I don't know how they're going to use it because you have to keep it at a certain temperature, so you just couldn't leave it in a squad, like in a glove compartment, for example. It has to maintain a certain temperature where that might be too warm for it. So they'll figure out the next steps on how they're going to play it. And we've already had saves. I know Twin Lakes was trained in it, and one of their officers used it to save a life. And I know there's been a couple saves through that program.
Is that a liquid or?
It's a nasal. I'll have them come and do a presentation at one of our committee meetings where you just kind of give an update on that stuff.
Do we have a breakdown of where the overdoses are occurring?
Yes.
Throughout the county?
Yes. Okay. Yes. EMTs certainly track that in Kenosha, and then we have it also throughout the county.
So where the higher numbers are, is it because they don't carry it? Is it?
I think it's just, you know, Narcan in this community, as far as distribution and availability, is just starting to roll out. So, I mean, we're certainly targeting those areas where there's been a higher incidence of overdose. I know the Kenosha EMTs have been carrying it for a while. So
yeah, they gave it to one of my inmates the other day.
Yeah. So they, you know, that's what we're looking at to get the education and the prevention and all that stuff out to those areas.
I got a question. Is fentanyl becoming a real problem in Kenosha?
Yes. The fentanyl derivatives are also getting laced with the heroin, which are, you know, it's elephant tranquilizer for the most part, and worse. And that doesn't go well in a human body.
You're just full of good joy, aren't you?
You're asking the questions.
Anybody got any other questions for Tammy? Thank you for coming. Welcome back.
Sure. Thank you.
We found you entertaining. I found you.
Oh, perfect. Maybe I'll come back again then.
We're down to mention grant.
Oh, here we are.
Hi, LeVert.
Hi.
Long time no see. I'm ready.
Okay. I handed out a sheet that looks like this. The bottom looks like that. The we received a grant. Started in January of 16 and ran through June of this year. To a small grant to help reduce the improve the interventions for people with dementia in crisis and to reduce admissions to hospitals and institutes. Surprisingly, that more and more people with dementia have, I mean, we're not talking about huge numbers, but there's still people that with dementia that ended up in the institutes where they do not belong. and because of behavioral issues, but that dementia is not a mental, a mental health, a mental illness. So the state has been working with trying to assure better interventions for people with dementia and to reduce the number of people going going into the hospitals. We applied for the grant and to do a couple of things. We pulled together a stakeholder group and got ideas to various people from throughout the community, got ideas from them about what they would like to see. And we accomplished a couple of things. We had we developed memorandums of understanding with four home care agencies so that if a crisis or adult protective services gets called to a home, say the spouse who is the caregiver goes to the hospital, who can stay with the spouse at home with dementia until family can be engaged or some other arrangements made. So that was put into place. And we also conducted six trainings of people of with, I think three of them were for direct care workers and three of them were for other crisis responders, and I think the last one we had more family members involved. These were four-hour trainings to focus on understanding some of the behavior issues that may accompany dementia and how to intervene and communicate with individuals who may be escalating. And those trainings were very, very effective. And then the fourth thing that we're doing, we started, we purchased these folders. I don't know, you may have seen, we have this, for years we've been providing the small files of life that we give out at the expos and stuff and for people to keep medical information in and the so EMTs can see it on their refrigerator. But we developed a form. And I can share that with you. Two that would be specific to people with dementia, and that they could play. And then what we're going to do is have a safety start a safety campaign where we would encourage families with a loved one with dementia to use the larger pocket, and then to put the in addition to the information that normally goes in the medical information. To also include a dementia information, helpful dementia information related to their loved one, so that the people responding, whether it's crisis, APS, whether it's law enforcement or fire and rescue, that they can understand a little bit what's going on. And so what we'll do is for the people with dementia, we'll put a little purple angel on the pocket. So, and we're going to be doing some training sessions with EMTs and to alert them to this resource. We did meet with, we got input from some of the EMTs, and they loved the idea that this would be affixed to the refrigerator. Now, when we did a survey at the expo back in March or February, and we asked seniors that came to our table, would they use this one or would they use the small one? Now, probably about two-thirds of the people that came said they would do the small one. They didn't want this big thing showing on their refrigerator, but they wanted it for their parents or if they had a family member who had a chronic condition, then they wanted this. So we will be starting a campaign, both in, including presentations throughout the community and putting a big spread in My Life and getting the word out and encouraging people to use that. On the handout that I gave you, it was interesting when we pulled together the statistics for to see what our results were. If you look at under outcomes with the contacts, the first, this has to do with contacts to adult crisis and to APS. And we took in 2015, the average monthly dementia crisis contacts were seven a month for adult crisis and 20 a month for APS, adult protective services. In 2016, that went down and then even further in the first half of 2017. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't get, APS gets, still gets lots of calls related to persons with dementia, but it's not at that last minute crisis point that we're getting more calls earlier related. And then this, in that second table, you can see in terms of the emergency detentions for people with dementia, went from an average, went from, these are per quarter. So you see how that went down from 2 in the first quarter of 2016 down to 0 in the last quarter of, would have been the second quarter of 2017. So I think we're on a good part, and I kind of attribute that to, I think through our trainings, particularly nursing homes and assisted living facilities better understand the role of adult protective services and adult crisis in relation to persons with dementia, that they know that, I think they're understanding that they have to learn how to deal with some of those behavior issues, or will also help, will send somebody there that can help maybe assess some of those behavioral issues, but that they can't just call the phone and say, take them away, because that's not appropriate for people with dementia. And when they say that they're a dementia facility, they really need to make sure that their staff are trained to be dementia proficient.
How many facilities in the Kenosha area are dementia?
I can't tell you the number, but yeah, we do have a lot of them that say that they're dementia. They
are, they mostly nursing homes or?
We have both assisted living facilities, and I mean all of them have some people with dementia, but there are some that specifically say that they're a dementia facility.
Is dementia and Alzheimer's, are they associated with each other?
Dementia is a broader category, and Alzheimer's disease is the biggest proportion of people with dementia.
So they would be in this group.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was reading something or heard something that we're no further along with that than we ever have been, figuring out Alzheimer's. Do you have an opinion? Does that sound right to you?
Well,
I mean, I'm just saying,
yeah.
Relative to years ago, they're saying we're really not in for no longer.
Well, I think nobody is saying any more hardening of the arteries, or, you know, like they used to 2 years ago, or, you know, they, so, yes, I think they are further along. Do we have a way, a prevention? No, we don't. We can't prevent it at this.
I understand. I'm not saying that's an issue here. I'm just as a curious, because Alzheimer's associations have been around forever, 30 some years, and they're, I mean, have we heard any progress? I mean, have you got in your profession, you heard anything?
I read an article about a month ago, you know, at all the drugs that were put out, you know, 10 plus years ago to try to help prevent or stop some of the symptoms, and most of those have proven not to be effective either. So yeah, they're kind of behind the eight ball on this one, and I think but you know, with the science and understanding more some of the causes, they'll get there. I know people are doing some good stuff now about,
yeah, I'm sure,
you know,
they are. Yeah.
Treating and dealing with it.
I heard a couple of months ago that Biogen is working on a Alzheimer's drug, and they're, the stock was up like $25 in the last month, so, because I think they're getting close to it.
That's what you looked at. Doesn't care if it's good or not. He made 20. That's
Biogen.
That's all he cares about. He doesn't care what they're doing.
When you hear the...
Yeah. 20.
It's $360 a share. Let's see when you buy it.
The researchers are certainly looking at all aspects and ruling out certain things, and I think that they have been making progress, but it's very slow. Mm-hmm. They've also been identifying some higher risk factors that are very similar to risk factors for other chronic conditions, things like exercise and diet and obesity and other things that they're finding higher rates of dementia with people who have some of those conditions that also contribute to other illnesses, to heart disease, to diabetes, etc. In fact, diabetes is another risk factor.
Is this somewhat hereditary too?
Yes, yeah.
So it sounded earlier like there are facilities that are claiming that they can handle dementia, but are not really capable. Without naming names.
I would say that there are facilities, yes, that have had difficulty, that are, say that they are dementia facilities, but have had difficulty when things escalate, and yeah.
So is there any way to, I mean, let the community know what facilities actually have the capability?
Well, maybe it's staff turnover, you know, and they just haven't.
Well, right, but I mean, do we take it upon ourselves to, as a responsible side, to say, hey, this facility, not so much this facility is not capable, but these are the facilities based on the staff that are there, you know, I mean, maybe we have a knowledge of who those staff are, and if they leave, we're notified or something like that, you know?
That would be very, the state is looking into that, to try to look at
like
a state.
An accreditation associate or something like that.
They are looking into it, because other counties have complained about that too, and so they are looking into that. It would be very difficult to try to identify, and in fact, I don't think, as an ADRC, I don't think we would even be allowed to do that, to identify certain facilities, and things change. With nursing homes, administrators, other than the county nursing home, administrators are changing constantly. Staff, direct care staff, are changing frequently. There's a lot of, certainly with direct care workers, because of the low wages, because it's a Medicaid facility and they get low rates. But.
Right. Well, I mean, it's just like a hospital. If a hospital doesn't have a cardiac wing, then I'm not going to take my mom there when she has a heart attack, you know? Yeah. I mean, we should be knowledgeable. We should know this stuff. And I guess you say the state's working on something?
Yeah.
Okay. Because, I mean, I don't want to take a family member to a hospital or to a facility that claims they're dementia, you know, capable, but they're actually not. I grew up in the 80s, and the 80s nursing homes in Chicago, and they were terrible where my grandmother was gone. And people screaming like all day.
For a certification, is that what you're saying?
Right.
This nursing home is certified to handle.
But it sounds like the state's in the process of doing something along those lines.
They're supposed to be looking at the issue. I don't know how much they've done. We have had some frustration with the Division of Quality Assurance, where when we have complained about certain issues, not necessarily specific to dementia, but other issues, and where they've kind of redirected it back on us, and where that has not in the past been our purview to look at residential facilities, be it nursing homes or assisted living facilities. And it seems as if this right now the state is turning some of that back on us, to that we are the ones that are, and we don't have that kid.
Where do most Alzheimer's Association's money go to research? Is that primary, would you say primary? Like Chicago's got a giant Alzheimer's Association. It's been there forever. And is that what you'd say? Most of it would go to research, the money that they generate, or that they.
I would guess that most of it is in research. They also have a certainly the one Southeastern Wisconsin Alzheimer's Association also does community education. They have a hotline that family members can call with for information. And provide some education.
Eva.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is more of a comment, not so much a question. And I'm raising it because we've talked about dementia and Alzheimer's. I remember a number of years ago reading a news article. They had done studies on why orchestra conductors live so long. You know, if you're an orchestra conductor and you're 40, you're a baby. If you're an orchestra conductor and you're 60, you're a spring chicken. You don't really become a, you know, patron saint of the art until you're like 80 or 90. And many of them live that long, the vast majority, and retain many of their mental and physical faculties while doing so. And they discovered that concentration and upper body motion was essential in helping them have that kind of longevity. And so I've often wondered what it might mean, you know, and this would be over the course of probably several years, you know, two, three times a week, a 30-40 minute conducting class for senior citizens, what that might yield. But I'm just putting that out there as a statement.
Well, certainly, that's one of the things that that is recommended, that in terms of to maintain brain, to keep your brain active with challenging kinds of the processes.
But you have to have, almost have to have somebody living in a house with dementia, you know, family, unless a family comes to you, you would have no knowledge that it was even going on to be able to help them.
It's true.
Yeah. You know, I guess I don't see a lot of dementia talk out in the community. I mean, it's like, put them in a home and we'll forget about them.
What percentage of the people diagnosed with dementia are considered violent, and what do we do with those violent persons?
Well, most of the, if you look on that purple sheet, for example, it's a lot of it is people aren't necessarily naturally violent, but they're trying, it's a means, their behavior is a means of communication. They're trying to communicate something to, they could be in pain, they could be a variety of things. And so what some of these sessions, trainings are, it's to advise people on how to communicate with someone with dementia, and then things not to do. So most situations, the behavior can be managed if you understand more about the individual. And that's the purpose of this sheet too. What are the things that that upset the individual and that should be avoided?
Are some of them identified as potentially violent and others as nonviolent? Or, you know, when we have people in a facility with dementia?
I don't know how they identify in facility. Usually, actually, we find that if there is a history of violence, a lot of times facilities don't want to take individuals. Right. So I think a lot of times, I don't think it necessarily is natural. It occurs because of something going on in their environment or what they're seeing, hearing.
Okay. Thank you.
You have workshops on recognizing dementia.
We are doing more. We now have also the legislature, actually, if the budget is ever is approved, we hope right now the dementia care specialists are back in the, they were added back into the governor's budget with the, by the Joint Finance Committee. And then our position would be able to continue, and that's somebody who's able to meet with families on a one-to-one basis and talk to them about all of these things, the things that they're going to be facing, and ways to keep the loved ones safe, things that they're going to have to prepare for. So.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking here on the Dementia Innovation Grant, these two tables at the bottom, type of agency and position held. I see under other for type of agency, it says 27. For position held, I see it says 26. The only reason I bring this up is I'm wondering if any folks who are our transit workers were involved at all, because I know they, you know, on a daily basis, hourly basis, they see all kinds of folks. That would probably, a number of them fall on, under this category.
They were, in addition to this grant and the dementia specialist grant, we also had, if you recall, the dementia friendly grant that we got from the Helen Bader Foundation. And with that, that's the grant that we were training a lot of businesses to be dementia friendly. And the transit workers were one of the first to be trained. They were right on board.
Thank you.
Anybody got anything else for Laverne?
I do. What? So this goes back to the facilities, and you said that, you know, some of the facilities aren't, like, capable, but capable in what ways? Like, the staff aren't properly trained, and they need to be, you know, updated with how they run things? Like, I'm not understanding.
I don't know if I can answer that, whether it has to do with protocols or whether, I think some of the people, all I can tell you is that some of the people who attended the the training who did work at facilities, we had a number, were very happy with the training that they received and said that the information will be helpful. And there was a comment from one, I wish that my manager had taken this training or something. So I think that they were grateful to have the additional training. We did, with the grant, we were able to, we held Saturday trainings, Saturday mornings, and were able to give a $50 gift card for direct care workers. And that is largely because in the past, we've found that a lot of the direct care workers aren't paid to take training. They can't, when we do offer things, they're often not there because they can't get off of work and don't get paid because they're needed on site. And so this was an opportunity to be able to pay them for the time that they were in training.
Just one last question for me, I guess. How many law enforcement calls are we getting for dementia or Alzheimer's?
I don't have that.
But do you think
we can get that?
Can you hypothesize or guess that it would be a large enough number that I think those packets are great to put on a fridge, but what about for, you know, if a law enforcement officer comes to the door, maybe just like a little sticker or magnet or whatever for the door so that they have a better knowledge when they're, what they're walking into?
Well, there is that. In fact, they sell, the people that do these also have the stickers. We've avoided that because of a concern about the safety of the...
HIPAA.
Well, no, not HIPAA. I mean, if the family or individual agrees to it, but worried that somebody who might prey upon that individual might use that information.
Nothing else on dementia. Mental health service update.
Okay.
Hi, Oliver.
Hi.
Welcome back.
This is the sheet that we're looking at now, and it's, I found it hard to believe in thinking about that it was only 16 months ago that we reported out on the mental health study, because we've really accomplished a lot. And I'm very excited to report some of the things that have happened related to psychiatry. Kenosha Human Development Services added one full-time psychiatric nurse, and we'll be adding another one this fall. Another individual is starting. And the Aurora Foundation, if you saw in the paper, just approved a $250,000 grant to add a telepsychiatry site at KIDS. That will include a half-time child psychiatrist and a half-time adult nurse practitioner, mental health nurse practitioner.
That's really good news.
Yeah, so we're real excited about that. And one of their staff just entered Marquette's Fast Track Advanced Nurse Practitioner Program, and is intending to come back and practice in the mental health area in Kenosha. Regarding community services, we mentioned that the new care center should be ready for occupancy in 2018. We purchased grant-funded tablets for crisis workers in the field. Our enrollment in the CCS, the Comprehensive Community Services, has increased by 37%. And then we increased hours with the approval in the budget. We increased hours this year at Bridges Community Center. John talked a bit about the drug intervention that we had. We've just been approved for a $97,000 state grant to increase the number of people that we can serve in the Vivitrol program. We're also optimistic that we will receive a federal grant that will provide peer coaches, individuals who've gone through recovery themselves from addiction, and would be available through adult crisis then to respond to overdose survivors and to try to encourage them, connect them to treatment. And encourage them to follow through. And then you're aware of the DA's pre-sentencing project that started this year. Then related to hospitalization, there is a clause, and so a lot of that really has to do with this, in terms of anything that we can do there has a lot to do with the state and whether they will be able to fund some of the cost of the IMDs. We're not seeing hospitals in adding psychiatric beds, general hospitals adding psychiatric beds, and I don't think we can place much hope in that. So in the budget, there is a clause that in the, that's described in the box there that would share some of the profit that the IMD has made. The state institutes, we learned, made some profit, substantial profit. Yeah, and and they, so the question comes, if they're making a profit and we're paying we're paying for the costs, can they share some of that?
Yeah, that's okay.
And so there is a provision in the budget to share some of that. It's not anywhere near what I think we would like to see, but it may be a start to there's still, I think, some negotiation between WICSA and the Wisconsin County Human Services Association and the state for how that can be shared. This is small, but it's a start.
You're saying the state's making money off the counties?
Correct.
Yeah, I would say so. When this was reported, actually, a year last fall, I was in a meeting at the mental health conference about it when they reported it, and they said that they put X percent into their IT system, and I asked about sharing that with the counties, and they were concerned that we wouldn't be incentivized to keep people out of the institutes. I said there's still a long way. I mean, even if we were paying less money, or if they were covering for a few days, but
it's like a bad novel up there, isn't it?
The other thing I just wanted to mention, but they also set up a system for some of the people that sometimes people from family care that were in the family care program get hospitalized at Mendota and or Winnebago. And they set up a system for a pot of money where counties could be reimbursed for the costs of people who are in family care. Unfortunately, last year we only got, after a lot of work, we only got $7,700.
I think there's a resolution needs to be drawn around here on this stuff. I can see that, huh? No kidding.
Then the other thing is that the state did request a federal waiver that would, from the exclusion, there's a federal exclusion of the people 22 to 64 from Medicaid coverage in an IMD. And the state has asked for a waiver, a federal waiver on that. But as far as I know, that they haven't heard yet from that. So I don't know. That's all.
Do the chair to my colleague across the table. Were you serious when you said that?
Yes.
Okay. I have a thing drafted up. I don't know where our county board chairwoman has delegated it to or what she wants to do with it. I've sent her two reminders. Some of this could easily be roped into that.
Well, I think it's something you should look at
Do you want to make some marks on your sheet and I can bring it home tonight and look at it?
I won't be there tonight, but...
No, I mean just on this so I know, you know, specifically what to...
Yes.
Thank you.
I can do that.
Cool. Sorry. Thank you.
That's all I have.
Always interesting. Any other business authorized by law?
Just a reminder, October will be our budget meeting. That is scheduled. Everybody should have that in their calendars, correct?
October 19th.
October 19th at the Job Center.
4:30, food will be served.
Yep. Thank you. We rehearsed this. So we weren't planning on holding our regularly scheduled meeting. We don't have any resolutions, it looks like, at that point in time. And generally, we just combine that meeting and call it our October meeting. So just a reminder to the committee.
That was the 19th, you said?
Yes, sir. That's what Andy said.
Food starts at 4:30, if I remember it right?
Correct.
And what are we having this? Prime rib?
You know, Janine's been searching the web for something delicious for her. So I believe we'll be in the Commons area this year.
Like last year?
We've met before in that area.
You got quite a crowd.
Yes.
Any other business? Committee members? Got any comments? Come on, guys, what do you think?
School's a jerk.
School just started this stunt.
Are you finding it interesting, informative?
Yeah. I mean, it's getting all the inside tales.
A lot, you know, a lot of
it's
numbers.
It's a lot to process when you don't know it. So it's like, starting to get the hang.
We got it.
I hear a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Does I hear a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're out of here.
Yes.
Okay, the Bears going to play this year and they got to play you off.
Can you put that back on record, please?
It is on record.